Good afternoon, North State, and welcome to Free Fire Radio right here at Tobacco and Brew. We're at 2143 Hilltop Drive. Welcome to our first show of the new year. And our guest today, and by the way, we have a very nice crowd today. Welcome yourselves. We have our usual gang of suspects, plus a bunch of new ones here today, so this is great. And our guest today for this year, to begin the year off, is the Vice Mayor of Reading, Missy MacArthur. Thank you, Missy, for being here.
Thank you, Carl, for having me. I'm disappointed Linda's not here, and I'm disappointed she has laryngitis, but you guys do a great show, and I'm real happy to be here with you.
Well, thank you. I miss her too. You know, when, of course, we have, lots happened in our lives with the new radio station. And as people say, you know, that they're glad for us to be, you know, really happy that we're back on the air. And as we say, well, you know what, we had to buy a radio station to get our own show, but we're there and we're enjoying it. And we're getting a lot of support from the community and we're real happy with that. And, but I miss her too. You know, I'm talking in the studio on the mic, and I look over here to my right hand side, and Linda's not there, and I just kind of like end the thought 30 or 40 seconds early because I'm used to her. You know, she hops in and takes care of me.
I'll have to finish the sentences for you today.
There you go. So today, what we want to do is we want to talk about Reading, and we just had a number of meetings that have happened, a number of things being voted on, including yesterday with the, I think they called it the Radical 10 ideas, and they had a number of these that were voted on. But we want to talk about that. But first of all, we want you to introduce yourself and let the people that may not know you as well as some of us do, something about you and, you know, where you've come from, you know, and how'd you get to be on the city council here? I mean, did this just happen? So tell us about yourself.
I'm a local yokel. I was born here. And I don't know how many have been here more than, how many have been here more than 50 years in Shasta County? One? Just one. Two. Oh, somebody's back there kind of afraid to raise her hand, but she's going up. Yeah, so I've been here quite a while, so I've seen a lot of changes. When I was a little girl, the population was 10,000. Now it's 90,000. So having grown up here, my grandfather was a motorcycle cop that later became a judge, and we had a ranch down the south of town. So I've sort of seen the changes that have come along from agriculture and timber to medicine and tourism. For 25 years, speaking of medicine, I was a physician assistant. That's a PA. That's like a nurse practitioner. I worked for 7 years in family practice, 7 years in women's health. And then the last 12 years of that career, I was at Mercy ER, working as a PA there. So I've seen a lot of different things and aspects of life. Having grown here, up here, I have a passion for my community. I also have a passion for literacy. I believe that the way you change society is to educate society, that knowledge is what changes people's way of thinking. And when I see other countries like Afghanistan and so forth, and I'm sure that the bots probably know a lot more about that than I do, but when I see those countries that have no education and or restricting education, I think, gee, if we could just get them all a computer with Google so they could see how the rest of the world is, they wouldn't put up with tyranny and dictatorships. They would see that there is a better world out there for them. So I believe passionately in literacy and education, which is why I subsequently was on the Shasta College Board of Trustees. I'm still on the Chico State President's Advisory Board. My mom was a teacher, fourth grade teacher here, so I got to watch how it was up close and personal as I grew up, grading homework every night and having to put up with trying to run home, get dinner on the table, grade papers, and raise your family. So I had a role model of a woman that could do a lot, and I've been trying to emulate that ever since. She passed away when I was 13, and I miss her still to this day. I think that I would like to hear from you all what your definition of a patriot is. I see this little card right here in front of me. And I did look up patriot right before I came over today. And it said, someone who loves or zealously supports his own country. And I was wondering if that's your definition. The things that I see here, do you feel underrepresented or unrepresented? Sorry, I don't have my glasses on, so I can't see it. Will your voice be heard? Can you see that, Carl? Oh, he's got his arm out as long as
I've had my arm out about as far as I possibly can, but here we go. I'm dragging out the cheaters. And what it says is, do you feel unrepresented, want your voice to be heard, want to get our country back, want to make a difference, and then join us? And it's one of the Tea Party groups that we have here in town.
Okay. So I'm curious what individuals think about what is a patriot. Myself, a patriot is somebody who is absolutely 100% behind their country, just like the definition I read. And that can take many forms, in my mind. You are a constitutionalist. You believe in everything in the Constitution. That's a patriot. And I'm there with you on that one. There's a lady back there that would like to speak.
Somebody that votes and fights for their country.
I think when you're saying patriot, if you don't mind me hopping in here, it doesn't mean that you just go right down the line and jump off the cliff. What you want is your country to be strong, and if you see things that you don't agree with in the leadership of our country, whether it's at the city level, the county, or the state, or the federal, is that you do stand up and that you do say, hey, you know what? I don't agree with what you're doing. That's what's made this country great. It doesn't mean just go along with whoever's in charge, or we may be going places we've never thought we were ever going to go.
And I agree, and I think I was very blessed to have been born here. I don't think that makes me more of a patriot than somebody who has been here, I mean a patriot for my county or my city, than somebody who's been here maybe 5 months. It's all about recognizing that your community is number one with you. You're going to make it the best that you can make it and put in your 2 cents and make it happen. I know people that I've grown up with all my life that do nothing for our community. And the fact that you're out here right now today means that you care. And I respect that very much. And the man back there would like to say something.
Well, how about what it's not? It's not about what you think you're entitled to.
I'm not clear on the question.
Well, when he's talking about, I'm sure it's about entitlements. You know, there are certain things that you have the right, based on the Constitution, freedom of speech, freedom of religion. But I don't see anything in the Constitution that says I have a right to drive a car. I don't have a right to yell fire in a crowded place, but I do have the right of freedom of speech. Entitlements being is that things taken from people that work hard, given to people that have made bad choices in their life. Is that what you're talking
That's
about?
That's right, Carl. You know, there are three things that everybody in this room and across this nation have, and that is time, talent, and or treasury. And it's what you do to give back to community with that time, talent, or treasury. Not what you think you can get.
And sometimes there is no time. I know, like the example of my mom. She did as much as she could for her community, but between working, raising a family, the amount of time she had maybe to do an extra thing, although she did work in the summers teaching swimming lessons at the South City Park. So there are limits sometimes to what people can do, and the fact that they're being productive is giving back as much as they can. So I wouldn't want to say that somebody has to give back because circumstances may preclude that from happening.
But, you know, they are giving back. If they're working, sometimes it's two jobs, but they're working and they're doing their best. It's that they're trying. They're trying to support their family. They're trying to support their community, as opposed to people that make that decision to let the community support them. Let our taxes support them because they've made poor decisions in their lives. They've decided not to get an education. They've decided to use drugs. They've decided to drop out because they can go down and sign their name someplace and get taken care of, which is what I think you're, you know, which I'm picking up on you, what you're against. We have a... Hi.
Donna.
Hi, Donna.
I appreciate you being here today to get better acquainted. And I'd like to remind those in office that government's purpose is not to provide for the citizens. It's to protect the citizens so that we can live our own lives, make our own decisions. I think that it's stated in the Declaration of Independence that the purpose of government is to protect life, liberty, and property. And I think those are just very important to remember that and not try to do more for the people because you have to take more and more tax dollars to provide all the services that and government should not be doing for the people what we can do for ourselves.
Thank you. You know, Missy, I like to talk about is we've had a number of things happen. As everybody knows, the city of Reading has taken some tremendous cuts in our revenue in this past year.
I'll say.
Yeah, and, you know, yeah, welcome aboard. Missy gets sworn in last year, and the whole economy dumps. It had nothing to do with Missy. I'm almost positive of that, you know. But you've had to face some huge, huge decisions and where we're going in our city. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, unfortunately, because of the economy, I think that we're in probably for some more cuts. And it doesn't mean that the city council is against any one group or for another group. A lot of times it's just across the board. We have to balance the checkbook. So I agree with what you said about government is there to protect. I do believe that when times are good, it is also there to provide some amenities, like the library. And I don't know if you knew, but I was very instrumental in getting the bond up here for the $11 million from the state so that we could build our new library. And, again, that goes back to literacy and education. It's something I'm passionate about. And I don't know if you've been to the new library lately, but you can't get a parking place some of the time. It's just amazing how people are using that thing. So going back to how do we make cuts and so forth, we try and be as fair and as equitable as we can, as well as keeping services up. So we're trying to keep the cops on the beat, the firemen in the station, and keep the roads paved. And those are our priorities. Other things, the library, Turtle Bay, I have a passion for those, but I recognize that now is not the time to be spending our dollars there as much as let's keep everything in balance and everybody healthy.
Hi, my name's Anita, and I was just wondering, I heard over the radio a couple of days ago about, I forget if it was city or county council, somebody gave over $400,000 for a lobby, some sort of lobby money, and I was just wondering if you knew anything about that, and if you do, what are we lobbying for, and who's paying for that $400,000 that comes from our city of Reading, California?
That's a very good question. If you happen to read the Record Searchlight yesterday, Scott Mobley did explain that. It first came up on a blog, on Mark Beecham's blog.
Yeah, Mark was on our show Tuesday, and that's when you probably heard it. We talked a lot about where $400,000 was. It was, when you look at it, we are the second largest lobbyist in the state of California, the city of Reading, if you looked at it strictly from the numbers. But then they did a little bit more research, and we covered that the next day. But go on, Missy, and this will make you feel better.
Right. So the breakdown actually was that a large percentage of that money is through the electric utility as part of the funds that of the electric utility that we belong to in the state. So it's very, it's all actually a small portion that goes to just lobbying for the city of Reading. And it, the lobby company, Gonsalves and Company, is doing a good job actually at promoting certain things for us. Like we're working really hard to get that huge courthouse deal still up here. And that will put a lot of people back to work. It'll add a lot to our construction industry and get some money flowing back to our community if we can get it here. But we are fighting, just like we did with the library, we are fighting with Los Angeles to get that up here. So I do believe in the power of lobbies. I've seen them work, and it happens that they can go right into the senator or the assemblyman, talk to them, and browbeat them into remembering the North State. Remember the North State. And so I think it's money well spent, and the breakdown is a little bit different than was reported initially by Mark Beecham.
I think what it ended up being, it was something like under $30,000. The rest of the money were dues paid to power companies, you know, that they would pay anyway to be part of these organizations. So it's not like we were paying $400,000 to a lobbying firm that went down there. Now, the utility firms or the power organization, power firms that we pay dues to, they are also a lobbying group. So we were kind of like double counting it, or the city was double counting it, I should say, is the way it was, the way that I understood it in the article.
Mr. Starman is, I call him a Boy Scout. He is so, such a stickler, truly, for doing things right, that, in fact, I believe he overreported on this one, just what Carl just said. Can I digress just a second? I promised that I would do a advertisement today, and that's for...
Yeah, we do advertisements all the time. We love them.
That's for the Sundial Film Festival, which is, again, you have your glasses out again, Carl? March 10th through the 13th. And last night at the Radical 10, I said, let's everybody support this, because if we could make it like the Sundial Film Festival, we could maybe get some more people coming to Reading, discovering Reading, bringing those dollars in. Go ahead, Carl.
This is the Reading Sundial Film Festival. I am acquainted with this because Linda was in one of the films last year. The deadline for entries is this Monday, and the film festival will be held March 10th to the 13th. It's the second year of the festival, and it's to promote film and photography among youth from the North State and Southern Oregon. Now, if I remember right, there's a lot of people that weren't youthful that were also involved in this, and we had like 3 days. And if you had an opportunity to go see that, there were some really, really innovative films. Some of them were 5 minutes. Most of them are in that 10 to 30. I think the longest it can be is 30 minutes. You know, Fred knows about this. Fred is, of course, Fred Chavez is our cameraman, our entrepreneur here when it comes to it. But it is something that can bring people, and when you bring people, you bring funds to the North State. These have grown throughout the United States, these film festivals. So it's something that we really do want to support. Hey, our phone number here is 710-0765 if you'd like to call in with a question for Missy. Missy, one of the things, if I can change the subject for a second, and we have other people that want to have questions out here. The going in front of the voters is a question about excise tax on marijuana.
Oh, yeah. I want to tax the heck out of them.
Well, now, last year, I should say in 2008, we had no cooperatives that I know of here in town. And now we have about 30. Is it something?
I hear reports anywhere from 20 to 40. I don't know myself, and maybe somebody out there does, but I don't know.
Well, the city has to give licenses to them, from what I understand.
I don't know. It still seems pretty vague. I've never seen an exact number.
So can you tell us a little bit about this, an excise tax on marijuana here in the city of Reading?
Well, the city of Oakland, we discussed this last night. It was one of the Radical 10 ideas about why doesn't the city go into the collective business, and that was a 5-0 no vote on that idea. So it went down in flames, but we all said, 5-0, let's explore the idea of taxing, because the city of Oakland has done that, and so we've directed staff to look into that and see how we could do that. It turns out we'll probably have to put it on a ballot, and whether it's the June ballot or the November ballot will be determined.
Thank you. Thank you for being here. A question regarding the city-run or the government-run stores. I guess I'd like to know what the opposition of that would. What was the opposition to that? And also, if we did allow or did have a state-run or a city-run store, wouldn't that reduce or eliminate the need for these other private-run organizations to be out selling the marijuana? And wouldn't that be a safer bet for the city? And wouldn't it also bring in more money?
I think that that's an excellent point, and I know, like, for instance, in Utah, there are state-run liquor stores that you have to go to a liquor store that's run by the state to purchase alcohol. So it's not a new concept. Myself, personally, I and it's a personal, this is just me personally, I feel that the city being in the marijuana business just isn't somewhere I want to go. It just doesn't sit well with me. And the reason that I was opposed to the ordinances that the chief of police wanted to put forth is I felt like there were some potential constitutional infractions in those ordinances. And so I didn't want to go ahead with that until that had played out at the state court level. You had a further question.
You're opposed to it, I guess, for whatever your personal reasons are. But the state, the folks in the state have said that people have a right to it, and that they have to be provided if somebody wants to sell it. Well, the rest of us are going to be faced with all these stores coming up in different parts of the city, and I guess my own personal feeling is that that's going to expose me to more risk. If I have grandkids, they're going to be exposed to the more opportunity to buy that stuff off the street from somebody else. I'd much rather have it controlled by the city and by the state, as long as we as a state are going to continue to provide it. If we vote to abandon it later on, that's great too. But I'd much rather see you folks, folks like you that are in government, be responsible for that stuff being allocated out to the public. Thank you.
Thank you. What is it? Do we ever do like a show of hands here? Where I would like to see how many people agree with that position.
Okay. Now this is that the city takes control of the marijuana, the distribution and sale of marijuana for the city of Reading. That the city take control of that. Is that the question, right? Take the responsibility, but also then take the take the profit, right, and take the profit from it too. Okay, how many people believe that that should happen? Okay, not very many people believe that. Then how many people believe we should just let it be a capitalism-type adventure and let people find it where they can in communes that are springing up or that are throughout the city now? So it's a capitalistic type thing that if they make it, they make it, and if they don't make it, they don't. Okay, you're going to have to take my word for this. Oh, is there a third one?
If capitalism, that's all right, I have a loud voice.
Yeah, but other people can't hear you on the show.
Okay. If the city, was responsible for it, like they've done with the library, they could contract it out to someone to run it.
That's an idea.
A firm.
This is my viewpoint on this is, and this is just my viewpoint. Every time I see the picture of that lady in the paper, the doctor says, come see me to get your recommendations. She makes $8,000 a week just doing that, writing out recommendations. And those recommendations, they're not, and you know, I keep hammering on this one. It's not a prescription. People talk about their scripts. It's not a script. It's not a prescription. It's a recommendation. And some write this recommendation so that to use only for pain or use the minimum amount. Others say there's no boundaries on it. So if you can buy a pound of weed and smoke it all in one day, which some people, you know, try to do, that's okay too. The lady that comes up here, the doctor that comes up here, makes $8,000 a week on this. My problem was is that money leaves the community. If she's going to write $8,000 worth of recommendations a week, we ought to be able to tax that for this city, you know, and take that. You know, but the problem I have, just for me, is that when a city gets into selling a federally banned substance, that's where I start having problems with it. You know, and I understand, you know, that they're doing it out there, and that if a new president tomorrow could come in and say, guess what? It's a federally banned substance. And every one of these communes would go down tomorrow. Only thing Holder would have to say is we're going to enforce the federal drug laws. And every one of these would disappear, I promise you. Is that right? It goes underground. Now, and this is the last thing I'll say on it. I know people that use marijuana for medicinal purposes. I have no problem with that. I know, I believe in what they say. I believe that it works for people. I believe it helps their pain. I believe it helps their nausea when they're having chemotherapy. I believe in a lot of those things that it does help people. It helps people sleep. I know people in this room that they can't sleep. But if they use marijuana, they take that instead of a pharmaceutical type drug. So I have no problem with that. What's the old saying? Don't pee on my leg and tell me it's raining and tell me that's all for medicinal purposes. That's not what it is. There are people who are making money off this. And this is what I believe you're saying. If they're making money on this, and this is why we need to put some kind of tax on this, if people are making money off this, then the city should be able to get a portion of that to help take care of the results of this. That's just my opinion.
Well, my name's Rob, and I find it kind of strange that we're talking about something that we are insisting be a nonprofit get taxed. Now, I have no problem with taxing marijuana, but I do have a problem with taxing nonprofits because we normally don't. So where do we go from there?
In Oakland, they called it an excise tax, and I'm not a tax expert, so I'm not clear on you know, the subtleties of different taxes and how they can apply. But I know that's how Oakland taxes it, as an excise tax.
Well, I know that, you know, our government is telling us that, oh, no, it's not a tax. We can call it a fee. But you know what? You know, you're right. You know, if it's a nonprofit organization, do we then go after churches and other things, you know, medical facilities? But I think that even the communes that are in Oakland are agreeing with this. That they, you know, they're backing this whole thing. Is that, yeah, we have no problem with paying something in this.
My problem is, if there's no profit, why are so many people running to open up these places? Somebody's got to be making it somewhere.
Good point.
There is a profit. I mean, we're not naive about this. You know, a nonprofit just means they can't show a profit at the end of the year. That doesn't mean that you can't pay salaries of six figures on it. No, that's what it means. I mean, it just says you've got to go through certain hoops to be a nonprofit, and you've got to reach these things. Nonprofit agencies are, you know, they can take their money in salaries. They don't have to show that at the end. And they can make things like they want to expand their business. You know, they can do that, and still nonprofit. But, you know, no, I mean,
Carl's exactly right.
Let's not be naive about this.
The CEO of a nonprofit can make whatever money his board of directors says that he can make.
And in fact, and this is something that we're seeing with the veterans organizations, especially the ones that, quote, want to take care of our wounded veterans. Please, please check out that organization before you give money to it. There was one group down in San Diego. It was, you know, the Help the Wounded Veteran. I'm not sure that's the name of it, so don't quote me on that. It turns out that 90% of everything they pulled in, which is like $3 million, went to salaries for the CEO and his group. And guess who the CEO and his group were? Husband, wife, and son. Right? So before you give money to these nonprofit organizations, do yourself a favor and see how, what percentage of that money goes really to help the people. So,
On the website, do you have a way of posting? I know Snopes is good for finding out if it's fact or fiction on, you know, different online things. But
well, depending on if it's a political thing or not, you know, they kind of lean a little bit, you know,
but
some ways.
On the nonprofits, on finding that out, there is a way, and I don't, maybe somebody in the audience knows how to find that out, but there is a way to look at nonprofits and see what percentage actually goes back to who you're trying to give your money to.
It could be factcheck.org.
But I was wondering if the bots would maybe put that on there.
Well, I'll write this down. And there are various ways. You know, Snopes is one of them. But Snopes has a reputation that if it gets political, that they're going to be leaning to the left. But on a lot of other things that they can be taken. But there's factcheck.org too. If you look at both of them, you should be able to get a good idea on it. Another question.
Hi, if a person is sick and they're in pain and they go to their doctor and the doctor says, well, I'm going to prescribe marijuana to ease your pain, why can't that person take a prescription to the pharmacy and pick up their marijuana? Why do they have to have all kinds of little bitty buildings springing up all over town that we're having a problem with the smell and the traffic and the element going in and out? Why can't they just do the same with any other pill a doctor prescribes and go in and pick it up for their illness?
I think that falls under the FDA, which is Federal Drug Administration, and federally it's still illegal, so I don't see that happening.
What about if the doctors prescribe it or recommend it? Why don't they just provide it then?
I don't think too many physicians would like to do that.
Well, they'll take the money for the recommendation. So I think, you know, that way that would solve it, a lot of problems.
Well, not most physicians.
Okay.
Not the ones I worked with.
Yeah, you know, the physicians have a problem. A lot of them have a problem with prescribing for themselves anyway, from what I, you know, in the past, I'm sure.
No, I just don't see them writing prescriptions for marijuana. Most physicians.
Okay, we've got about 20 minutes. Oh, okay, Noni, good morning. How are you?
Great to be here. Thank you. Thank you all for being here. My question is, you know, prescription sounds like the best way to go, except who's going to grow it? Who's going to be the suppliers?
I think you just made some new rules about that too, didn't you? About how much can be grown in town, or was that the Shasta County? Okay, y'all did. I think it was
right, but it's similar to if you go back to the original question, it becomes a federal issue. I don't know that you can just start if you're trying to do it legally through the pharmacies and through the regular physicians. I think you start getting into federal law, and I don't see it being grown. You know, it's like in Afghanistan, they grow poppies to grow heroin, and the opiates become legal when we give you, if you're having a heart attack, we give you an injection of morphine, or you have bad pain, we give you Demerol, something like that, one of the opiates. But it's all, you know, controlled substance laws through the feds, and I don't see... Unless the federal law changes, I don't see us starting to mass produce marijuana in California to ship all over the U.S.
Though that would probably get us out of the budget crisis. You know, I'm a little tongue in cheek, but one of the things we said was, you know, we pick up hundreds of thousands of plants up here, right? The government pays us to take these plants, to bust these marijuana plantations. Maybe we should wait till they're just at that right time. Then we take them down. Then we make it Shasta County Wowie, and we corner the market in California and all points east. We get out of our budget crisis until they find out what we're doing. Okay, maybe a little bit to the.
I've actually heard, it's probably urban urban rumor or legend, whatever, that marijuana is the second biggest cash crop for California, even though it's all underground.
I don't think it's urban myth anymore if you're on the coast. You know, who would have thought, first of all, that we would have spent, 30 minutes talking about marijuana growth and sales and the city of Redding selling it and the county of Shasta, you know, procuring it, you know, 2 years ago. How many people would have believed that one? Okay, in the back, Ken.
Why do you think the feds are shutting down the forest?
Was that a rhetorical question? That, you know, it's to protect the marijuana plantations? Can we let's move to a couple other questions that was on the for the Radical 10. And by the way, Kent Dagg is going to be on our show Tuesday, and we're going to be discussing these. At least they had took a step forward, you know, thinking, well, can we do this? Throwing out some ideas. One was a raising the sales tax, I believe. That was one of the ideas.
That went down 5-0.
That went down quick, I assume.
Very fast.
What about the idea of giving away a property at Stillwater, letting the first person build there for free? Or
that actually passed 4-1, and the rationale was that it's like a lost, in my mind, it's like a lost leader. If you see an advertisement for cornflakes at 20 cents and it's generally $2, the market is selling that to get you into the store, so then you'll remember you had to buy milk, bread, corn, etc. But the lost leader is the cornflakes. So my thinking, and I can only speak for myself, not the whole council, on how I came to my vote, was that this will get, hopefully, be a lost leader and get people in the door once we have something going out there. That's been a huge money pit. And it happened before I was on the council, and I'm not sure I would have promoted the whole idea of Stillwater, but that train has left the station, and now what we have to do is get that thing up and running because there are a lot of taxpayers' dollars in that thing. So I don't mind giving away a lot if we can get it back in jobs and revenue, and we'll be looking hard at that, of how many jobs will be per size of parcel, because there are different size parcels out there.
Well, right now, the only thing we have on it is cows. I understand. The supervisor wanted to graze some cattle out there?
Yeah. Actually, there is it's just sitting there, so it gets us a little bit of income, like about $2,000 a year, but there's no water, so it's dry grazing. He has adjacent property, so I assume that he'll provide the water. And I asked that question. I said, who's providing the power for the pump to get water to those cattle? Because I don't think the city should be out any money. And they said, no, the lessee shall be paying for any
okay.
of that.
Hey, our phone number here is 710-0765. And let's go to the audience. Joe.
If you don't mind, I'd like to go back to the last topic for just a second. Thank you, Councilwoman and Colonel, for the opportunity to speak. I just wanted to say that our corporation, I'm Joe Levy of Tobacco and Brew, our corporation has over 10 licenses to sell non-hallucinating tobacco. Each one of those licenses requires a background check and a separate set of fingerprints. We're also monitored by ATF, another license. Those licenses cost over $4,000 a year. The taxes are astronomical. If I tell you what they are, you probably wouldn't believe me. All I can tell you is I have a difficult time keeping 2% of our gross sales in our pocket. 98% go to taxes and overhead. And a majority of it is tax. The reason I bring this up is no one came to me with all these licenses and said, how would you like to sell marijuana? I don't know if I would. I really don't know. But nowhere in the discussion, anywhere that I've read, was the requirement, since it is a tobacco, for all of these licenses and all of these payments to be made. And I just thought I'd bring that to your attention to muddy the mix. Has it been mentioned at all these licenses that are required for tobacco?
In the ordinance, are you talking about the permit that the police chief is now enforcing?
Oh, no, these are state licenses. You can't sell tobacco without state licenses. Like I said, I have 8 or 10 of them. plus ATF, and they all are very intrusive. Background checks are very, very thorough.
And I believe what Joe is saying is that, you know, he's got to leap through 3,000 hoops to sell a legal substance, and then he pays 98% on almost by the time he add up all his taxes and everything to be able to sell tobacco, which is a legal, which is a legal entity. Are the communes having to jump through the same hoops? Are they having to go through, you know, do they have to get background checks? Do they have to do any of this also?
Yeah, under the new ordinance, and I actually agree with all that part of it, fingerprinting, background checks. I mean, just as you would with in your business, there that's part of the ordinance. So I'm not sure what the percentage is, because I don't know, since they're a nonprofit, if it's 98%, or I don't know how that how those numbers would break down, but they're
98%, I'm nonprofit too.
Well, but see, they're not being taxed though. But they're not being taxed, and that's what the excise tax is. And you're a for profit organization, yet they're acquiring wealth and not having to do the selling their type of tobacco, even though that, you know, it's an herb and whatever they want to call it. You're going through all the background checks. Now they're starting to, but you're having the people coming in, the feds coming in checking you all the time, daily. And when people said, well, then maybe the police should be able to go in and check these places, and they went, you know, everybody went high and to the right, saying, well, wait a minute, that's intruding on their privacy. I think if you're going to sell something in this town, you're going to sell anything that has an effect on you, and marijuana does have an effect on you, whether it, you know, it's good, bad, or indifferent. You know, there should be some kind of check on it.
So going back, yeah, we are working on trying to tax these entities, and we'll be putting that on the ballot. Now, you might not have been here when we discussed that earlier. Do you happen to have a copy, by chance?
I'll see if I can find your copy, but ATF does have it for sure, and that's I'd rather see you get it from an agency rather than a private businessman.
And that would be interesting. Look at what the ATF does to people selling tobacco, and maybe use that as a partial guideline for people selling marijuana in town.
I think that would be a great template, because part of my hesitation on backing all the ordinances is I felt like we were sort of shooting from the hip and coming up with our own ideas that might not hold up in court?
You know, I kind of the opinion that Joe needs some relief here rather than we put what he's going through on a bunch of other people, too.
That is a great idea. Why is somebody having to pay over, you know, to pay such exorbitant amount in taxes? But, you know, this is something that unfortunately, we can't fix here. We could, or we would fix it. But, you know, and I understand what you're saying, but on the other hand, somebody shouldn't have the right just to sell what they want and use under a guise of oh gosh, this is a nonprofit, when indeed there is money being made on this, and our community needs to be able to tax, collect a fee, whatever you want to call it, that can help in the watching of this, you know, in the regulation of it. I mean, that's what I see. Shouldn't have to come out of everybody else's pocket.
You're probably happy we shot down the increased sales tax last night, aren't you?
The word tax makes my eyeballs roll back in my head. I can't believe a businessman mentioned.
If, in case you didn't hear that, Joe said he was real happy that that was shot down. Okay.
My name is Joe Weidenfeld, and I want to ask one thing about that Stillwater Park. That thing is a dog, and it's going to be a dog, and it's going to just, if you put any money down into it, it's just going to be a bottomless pit. This city has 1.6 million square feet of vacant commercial property. And look at the across from the courthouse, I mean the city hall, you got a great big building that could, it would cost over $16 million. It couldn't even sell for $4 million. If someone gave you that building, you'd have to give it back to them. There's no tenants in it except, one tenant. It'd be about $500,000 to keep up, taxes and all that. But why is the city getting into the real estate business? It has other, it could use the money better in fixing roads and other things. That's my question.
I'd like to talk to you about the building across the street, because one of the things that I do is real estate investment myself. And I
you know Kurt Effort.
Pardon me?
You know Kurt Effort.
Kurt Effort.
He runs some of these buildings.
Oh, no, I don't know him.
And most of these buildings are, what do we do? Those 42 doctors here in Reading, and they're going to the cities because this city is not very friendly to small businesses, and small businesses cannot make it in this city. And I would not, I think about the only business I would go into is a marijuana shop, because that's the only business that's going to pay for itself. A lot of these businesses, guys are losing their shirts, and they're having a bad, bad, bad time, and people are moving to other states. You look at the Alabama. They got the big airplane contract for the refueling plane. Look in this state. We had Lockheed. We had Douglas and Northrop and Convair. They're disappearing. Why should I put any money in this state when I can go to Texas and make a lot more money on a business? These people in this state think you should run a business to employ people. You run a business to make money. If you don't make money, why employ people? And it's so rough, especially in this city, to run a business. I like your answer.
Well, let's see. You started with Stillwater, so let's finish with Stillwater. Going back to that, just as you're mentioning in Alabama, and one of the things that came up last night in the discussion about Stillwater was that, in fact, if you give away a property like one of the lots at Stillwater, you have stand a much better chance of getting somebody here and getting jobs here. And getting jobs here is how we then get revenue to pay for the police and to have jobs that people can afford to spend at different small businesses to hopefully make those small businesses more successful. So that, just so I finish Stillwater, I think that, like I said, it's a loss leader. I would not have probably promoted Stillwater if I'd have been on the council when all that was decided. That was decided years and years ago. What, like 8 years ago or 7 years ago? So that's not something probably I would have suggested. However, the building across the street from City Hall, I would, and I still am sick about the fact that we didn't purchase that. And I know a lot of Patriots were there in the front row. I don't know if it was this Patriot group or another Patriot group. But the reality is that building was $10 million to build. The city was going to get it for like $2.6 million. And even though we don't need it really badly right this minute, I'm telling you, when I was little, it was $10,000. It's now $90,000. It's going to be $180,000. We are going to need that building. It is in the proximity of City Hall. There's only a certain amount of property around City Hall. And the cost was going to be 0.5 to 1%. And I do real estate investment, and I mean this was a sweet deal. And Kurt Starman had talked to Sterling Bank and had the inside track on the price. I'll tell you what, as soon as it came out that the city was getting it for 2.6 and that we had decided to not purchase it because the vote went down 3-2, it's been like a shark feeding frenzy. The guy who built it, Gifford, Maurice Johannesson, Les Melberg, McConnell Foundation, and I don't know others, have just jumped on it. So I've heard it's in escrow, that one offer was made for the same price for a four-week escrow. Another offer came in at a same price for a two-week escrow. And so I think that imminently we will see it sold. But everybody had believed the article in the newspaper that said that it had gone on the courthouse for $4.2 million and didn't realize everybody in the community felt like it had gone back to the bank at the $4.2 million, and so there were no takers at $4.2 million. So it was a sweet deal. We lost it, and it just still makes me sick. So unfortunately, that was a good deal. Stillwater, like I said, I'm not sure I would have gone for that one. Strati Property, I don't get that one either. But those were, you know, before I was there, so maybe there's something that I'm not seeing.
I heard that building, it was a complete flop. I think there's rumors that the bank took it back, and there was no sale at all in that building. And for 1.6 million square feet of property, you know, vacant property up in this city, I will make a bet with anyone here. I bet that they won't fill that in 20 years because we're going into a depression. We're being undersold by China, and there's no business. Businesses are collapsing in the United States. Look at the unemployment.
We've got about 10 minutes left. So if other questions out here. You know, the one thing – anybody, other questions? We have one over there, or what?
I have a question.
Well, you've got the microphone.
Yeah, that's right. My name is Morgan Fisher. I own a small business here in Reading. I have a number of friends who have recently been working on starting businesses in Reading, and they found extremely unfriendly environment for a new business. One of my friends was starting a restaurant, and they came up with a cost of permits and this and that and this and that that they could add up to nearly $200,000 just to walk in the door, which to me, wait a minute, we're trying to raise taxes from people. Well, let's get some employees. We can't get employees with that kind of thing, and we're not competing against the rest of the country. In the Midwest, my brother came from Oklahoma. There's many little small towns there, and you know what they're doing? They're saying, come here, we'll give you property, you won't pay taxes for 5 years, just put up something that will employ people. And it's time that we get that mentality to realize, oh, we need to bring people here that can be employed. We're at 21% unemployment in Reading. What's up? So how then, as a city council member, are you going to help us to bring businesses here that want to stay, and they're not going to be fined or penalized
feed out of business,
which happened to another business that I was acquainted with.
Actually, that came up last night. One of the developers spoke to the fact that his to build a $350,000 house, his permit fees in 2004 were $20,000, and in 2009 his permit fees were $35,000. So in that amount of time, it went from $20,000 to $35,000. So I agree with you, and I think that we will be looking at that, like what's going on and why is that. I know that there are, of course, always more and more regulations, and you have to do it this way and you have to do it that way, which means in the building industry that you have a certain amount of green requirements and things have to be done a certain way, and so that may add to the permit costs. I don't know, but I think we'll be looking at that based on some of the comments that were made last night, and I think you have a valid point. I have a question for you all, and that is one of the things we've been promoting is shop local, and I'm wondering, how do you see us being able to compete with the internet? Because that's the biggest way that we lose our tax revenue on goods right now. People buy on the internet. What can local businesses, what can we as the city council do to encourage people to spend their dollars right here, as opposed to going online? And I'm sure people in this room have bought online. I know I have. It's convenient. It comes to your door. You don't have to go out in the rain. Do you have ideas, suggestions? I'd love to hear them.
You know, I don't have an answer for that. But I was just thinking that the free enterprise system works so much better when government is not involved with regulations and such as that. That I know that everyone that takes an oath to hold office says that they uphold the Constitution, and in the Constitution, we're allowed things that people cannot do for themselves is to build roads, post office, and the military. Those are proper functions for government to spend tax dollars for. And, you know, that is where we need to be. That's got to be our priority. But anyway, I think free enterprise, you know, that the competition there to meet the needs of the people with less government regulations, that's got to be, you know, most important for the city council to attend to that. But maybe somebody else has some thoughts on shopping on the internet. I'm guilty of doing that myself.
Let me just say something quicker, and then we'll get right to you, ma'am. You know, one of the things when Linda and I started KCNR was that so much of our lives are controlled by corporations, that people think that they can get the best deals if you go to the big box stores. We find that if you go to our local stores, to our neighbors, that they're going to bend over backwards to give you a great deal. You know, one of the things we've got to do is we've got to support each other. So when we say buy local, that's just what it means. You know, starting next week, we're showcasing one business a week, a small business, on our show, so people in our community can learn about that business. And we're going to do this every week. Every week's going to have one business, a local business, somebody that's putting it on the line. And that's what you do here in the city of Reading and all over the United States. The backbone of this country is our small businesses. 95% to 98% of the people that work for small businesses.
But how do you counteract the internet?
Well, you know, the only thing you can do is just take, it's got to be a conscious effort. It's got to be a conscious effort that says, do you want to see the city of Reading take a step forward? Then you've got to shop here. And you know what? And maybe it'll take, the city getting together and having something that just says, and people making an effort and a big campaign that says shop local, shop with your neighbors. Take a look at what's going on around you. Stop sending our money overseas. Stop sending our money to some guy in New York who uses it to put money in his Ferrari. You know, I'd rather spend money here and watch my neighbor put money in his Ford, you know?
Well, we would, but I look at the next generation, and my son is almost 20, and he does everything on the internet. I mean, everything. He doesn't. He never buys a newspaper. He reads it online. And it's just a whole different generation is coming up that does things completely differently than you and I. I mean, I believe shop local. The last two cars I bought right here in Reading. But a lot of people, it's the internet.
Well, I have the solution to that. All of the local businesses need to be on the internet selling their wares as well, because then they have the volume also. People like your son that like to shop on the internet, well, he can go down and pick it up right now. He just found it there, and he bought it there, but that doesn't mean he has to wait for it to be delivered.
And maybe that's what we need to do, Carl, is promote every small business putting their...
That we should have our businesses linked together. And, you know, there's many that do that already. And there's nothing wrong. But you're absolutely right. You know, that's the future. If you have a business and you don't have a website... But some people don't have the ability to keep, you know, like, you know, a huge inventory. You know, somebody, you know, so when they see it. But that can be worked around.
Anybody buying out of the area, it can be drop shipped. But the people locally, you know, it's what's in stock, and they can tell them whether it's in stock or whether it needed to be ordered.
There's got to be a big step forward taken. You know, you're right. You know,
one of the things that I wanted to get back to just for a second, on the industrial park, this whole thing is almost exactly like what it was like in the 70s when Mountain Lakes Industrial Park was coming into being. Quick question, Missy. How are we going to fill Stillwater if we raise our electric rates? Because I hear those are going up pretty soon.
You're kind of mixing a little bit of things up a little bit there, I think. But the rates are going up based on the cost of the power plant, the new power plant, and the fact that the hydro is really low. I don't know if you've looked at Shasta Lake lately, but it's looking more like a pond than a lake. So there are different reasons that the electric rates are going up, and that was decided before we ever decided to give a free giveaway at Stillwater. So now what was the part about Stillwater, though?
Well, I think
in there?
Yeah, from what I understand is that next year, I think with the electric rates, it's supposed to go up almost, what, 8% next year, and then the year after that, they're going up. From what I understand, from what I saw in the REU, and from things they were saying. Yeah.
So you're saying REU is giving to Stillwater? I'm still not getting. I'm
if
just.
How? How?
I'm sorry. Oh, okay.
Well,
that
the cost
was
of electricity.
That's the connection. I was not catching the connection there. I thought you were saying REU is moving to Stillwater or something. Or
yeah, back
not,
to the internet.
Not getting it.
The internet question: how do you combat the internet? Come on, folks. Shasta County is a garage sale mentality sort of county, isn't it? Not? Huh? Ever since I've been here at 1981, it's always been garage sale. Think of Craigslist and think of as entities, whether they're city or they're commercial or they're private. Have a garage sale for your unused items. Get rid of them. People want them. They'll buy them. That's how you combat the internet.
Well, Craigslist definitely works. My son shops Craigslist all the time.
We've run out of time here. We're after 1 o'clock right now. But this is obviously we need to have our city leaders here so they can hear. And Missy, we really want to thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me, you guys.
And let me say this, is that, you know, we were supposed to have somebody else here. It was set up one of our candidates. And one of the things we want to do on Free Fire Radio and KCNR is every one of our candidates that is running for office, we want to have one on the show, and we want to try and do it on a Friday. So then we can bring them down here at noontime, so you all can come down and ask questions, and you can meet who's running. So they're not just a face on the TV set, or you see a little poster on them. But, you know, this one, the person we were having down was going to be stuck in court, and when I called Missy on Wednesday and said, would you like to come down? And, you know, no hesitation, you know, because, you know, Missy stands up and she says, look, this is a good chance for people to ask me questions, for me to get out some answers here. So, again, thank you very much, Missy, for taking us in. Joe.
Just for Missy's information, the reason that we're not on the internet is back in 1985, the state of California, my personal friend, imposed a 57% tax on tobacco. It cut our business down to a fraction of what it was. And so if you go on the internet, you can buy tobacco from other states with no tobacco tax. And so they put us at a 57% disadvantage from day one. And our business in like doctors, lawyers, doctors, what it was, a third group that I can't think of them, they used to buy boxes of cigars, old bankers. They all get on the internet and import them illegally, they add, to Shasta County. So we cannot compete.
That's it. That's amazing. Yes, sir. Okay, you know, we're kind of like leaving the air here, but one last question back here. Right. Yes, sir.
Yeah, the reason the internet's been so successful is because the government hasn't been able to get their hands on it.
Okay, what he said was the reason the internet has been so successful is because the government has not been able to get their fingers into it. And you're right. Imagine what happens if they start taxing the internet. And in fact, you're starting to see that now. Certain states, you order something, boom, you get hit with taxes. And if you're going, you think you're going to be buying ammo from out of state, which people do, at least until next year, is that they put a huge hazardous duty shipping charge on that. So if you take a look at it, you'll find it's still cheaper if you can find it here to buy it in California.
And the other thing is on the Stillwater Business Park. Have they discussed anything about giving the whole place away? Have they discussed anything about maybe giving the first 2 years to everybody? Because if you give the first free one to you, I'm not coming here unless I get the same thing on the second one. So you've got to take all these things into consideration. Do we want people to come here and build and provide jobs? Give the whole thing away. No sense keeping it empty.
We haven't discussed it like that. We're sort of taking baby steps at this point. It might come down to that.
Hey, thank you very much for your attendance today. And we will not be here next Friday, but we will be here the Friday after that. So thank you very much.